Yitz Rubin should be here today.
We're rolling, Rebbe.
Okay, we're rolling. Today is February 6th, 2011, and we're happy to be rolling in class with all that's going on in the Middle East today. But at least it looks like in Egypt things have quieted down, and here in Israel, I imagine that in a few days we'll have a chief of staff one way or another. Anyway, I just want to comment on some of the communications I received. Number one, in relation to the Kastner case, Kastner is a very difficult question. I can't go into great detail now, Rudolf Kastner, but you recall in 1944 he was involved with Himmler in saving Jews. And there were tremendous accusations made against him. There was a trial in Israel. He was later assassinated walking on the beach, or right near the beach in Tel Aviv. And one of the charges made against him was that he selected, why did he select this one, not the other one? So I defended him on that level from my own experience in Hatzalah work. Unfortunately, you have to choose. If you try to save everyone, you save nobody. If you zero in on one person, you'll save something. And I explained in relation to the family that I was able to have a mitzvah pidyon shvuyim, which I'll talk about tomorrow, out of Russia. So people asked me, why did you dafka work for him? And I said I had to choose one. And in my book, I explained why I saw hashgacha pratit, and this is the one I should choose. Fine. It seems there are other accusations made against him. I'm not aware of all the details of the trial, but that he made money, he did illegal things, he was involved with the Mapai, they sent Jews to their death, and I can't comment on it. But I know that Harris just printed an article, it seems, by his granddaughter, and someone here is saying about the granddaughter, who's Michal Michaeli, that she took off her blouse or lifted her blouse on Israeli TV with all the implications. So I called my daughter, my eldest daughter, because I haven't watched TV in many, many years. I actually stopped, well, I used to watch the news, but I stopped watching the news when they started talking about the pullout from Gush Katif. It just hurt me too much. And as Chazal saying, I can hear the news, I can face someone can show me on the internet news, but it's very different than watching it on TV and having your heart taken away. But my daughter knows what's going on, my eldest daughter, who's a Tohenet and an Orach HaDin and is a well-known personality. So I just want to tell you, with Michaeli, she didn't lift up her blouse. My daughter explained to me she was wearing a low-cut dress. We're not giving her a medal for tzniut. She's far from it. She's not a Beis Yaakov girl. She's not a proverbial Beis Yaakov girl, or fancy English Ephraim, the quintessential Beis Yaakov girl. David explained that word to him after class, quintessential Beis Yaakov girl. But in simple Hebrew, she's not the classic Beis Yaakov girl, or the generic Beis Yaakov girl. But what happened was her dress or whatever fell down, and it was embarrassing for her. So I just wanted to do a lamed zchut that we don't have to attack a person whom we're differing with. We have to, you know, accept the facts. Okay, that's one communication I got. And if it's true in other matters that he killed Jews and pocketed money, then I don't defend him on those levels, obviously. I also received a copy of a blog by Harry Merrillis of Chicago, Talmud of Rabbanu Soloveitchik. He's a little younger than I am, and he's generally very insightful. So he's dealing with Balei Tshuva and Geirim, and he's dealing with the problem of a ger having a good memory of Christmas, family celebration, etc. I'm asking someone listening should please contact Harry Merrillis and tell him what I've told my students many times. I've told this to Gedolei Yisrael. It was said originally in front of Gedolei Yisrael by Lichtenstein and others, and their eyes opened. And the story is very simple. That back in 1961, in my first congregation, there was a couple, both very intelligent. One was getting a doctorate, one I think had a master's already, And they went on to a long story of teaching on a collegiate level, both in America and afterwards in Israel. And the wife was a convert. And she once said later on, when they lived near YU, he taught at YU, and they lived near YU, and they're very friendly with the Lichtensteins and others. And the lady said something unbelievable. She said, you know, people wonder why a Kohen can't marry a Giyoret. And she said, I can tell you why. Because a Kohen in the Torah represents the Rebbe, the teacher, the Melamed. As Malachi Hanavi says, you learn Torah, Yishmeru Dat, you learn Torah from a Kohen. And he represents the Rebbe, the spiritual leader. A convert can be the most sincere convert in the world, and she can be medakdeket in mitzvot kechut hasarah, but she will always have a good feeling of her youth when there was a Christmas party, when there was an Easter egg affair, when the family came together, and that warm feeling, it's not for a Kohen to be married to such a lady. And it's a meridic thought. So someone should tell that to Harry Merrillis, because he questions about the Christmas, the relationship. And here you have it from a Gioras set in front of Gedolei Yisrael, whose eyes opened when she said it. She should live and be well. He's not alive, but she's alive, and she should live and be well. Her daughter was actually my student in Michvala, and she's a Rebbetzin. She's a Rebbetzin, although not right-wing. They're not Haredim, they're Tzionim Datiyim, and she's a Kohenet Rabbanit, the daughter, and a vocal speaker for women's rights. Her husband is, if I'm not mistaken, a rabbi of a moshav, and he may also be a ram. Now, coming back, today's class is very fascinating, and you see the Summon Rosh right before your eyes. And today you don't have to be a genius to be able to put them into context. Also, I have absolutely no fear that I'm reading into the Summon Rosh. This is him, Labriot. So what did we see last week? We saw last week, and I quote to you the Gemara in the Talmud, it's also in Sanhedrin, I quote it to you the Rambam, Shemati Shebetin Matin B'Yoshim Shlomin HaTorah, and we see that rabbis have power that goes beyond the formal halacha, and you can actually execute someone. Someone rode on a horse on Shabbos, and they executed him. Someone had relations with his wife in a public park, and they gave him malkut for lack of tzniut. And you saw rabbinic power, you saw in the response literature, and I was just scratching the surface. But I think the most fascinating responsa, or responsum, singular, that I showed you last week was the Maram Lublim, how it was edited out of so many editions of the Maram Lublim, and here in Israel where there's no censorship, they reprinted it again in a very primitive fashion. I don't believe there's an edited edition of the Maram Lublin, but you can check it out. Your generation is more blessed than my generation. You have, on the other hand, you can't learn as well as my generation, so it's a double-edged sword. You were raised on edited editions, you were raised on Schottenstein, or as my grandchildren say, Schottenstein, and you know the greatness of art scroll, and you know the limitations. But believe me, better to have Gemaras in English and have Balei Tshuva than to have bigger lamdanim. I am very easily swayed by someone who tells me, Rebbe, I became a Shomer Shabbos through the Art Scroll Gemaras. So with all my critique on a lack of knowledge of Lashon Kodesh, I bow before the implications of what the Art Scroll Gemaras, Mishnayot, have accomplished, Mekarev, Rechokim, Liyahadot. It's a tremendous accomplishment. Okay, so the tshuva from the Maram Lublin is very fascinating. You see, the rabbis had the power to kill, to execute people. And this is not exaggeration. The rabbis had the power to cut off women's noses. Now, what does it mean to cut off their noses? It's the classic example. Gentlemen, you are young rabbis. Let me ask you a question. a wealthy balabas comes to you and he says, Rabbi, my daughter is 20, 21, she's been dating, her nose is crooked, she's insisting on having an operation to straighten out her nose. New cosmetic surgery. Do any of you know cosmetic surgeons? Take my word for it, Menachem, they are not poor. Josh, cosmetic surgeons do well. So I want to ask you a question. Mutta Nachmata, cosmetic surgery. So I have to tell you, I have students who studied with me. Believe me, the first time I met them afterwards, I had to bite my lips because you meet the young lady you know, and suddenly she has a different look altogether. So I know their fathers are friends of mine, and I asked their fathers, they asked the Rav, and the Rav told them that if it's for self-confidence, for a shidduch, you shouldn't interfere. And many Rabbanim are mekel, and as a matter of fact, I just read, relating to Charedim, that Charedim too, in the Charedi world already, there's cosmetic surgery. So what does it mean they cut off the nose? Ah, see, this is the reverse. A woman is attractive. What attracts a woman to a man? All right, every man is attracted. There's no way to explain the feminine attraction. In England, the BBC once did heavy research, I think it was in the 1980s, 1970s, and they did a whole program, a whole series. And the bottom line that they came up with is that there's no explanation. Every man is built differently. Beauty is in the eyes of the beholder. Or to quote Rakefet, one man's passion is another man's hot water bag. Well, I repeat, one man's passion is another man's hot water bag. But one thing is for sure, a woman whose nose is defigured is not attractive. So what the Rabbanim did is they disfigured the women if they sinned with a Gentile. Now, and there's endless tshuva that I gave you sources last week, the Maram Lublin, the Rush, you can look into to Professor Asaf, the research, and there's no question about it, the rabbis had this power. And it's a very important concept. It's, if you want to compare it to the power of kings, you may make the comparison, but the underlying theme is we cannot allow lawlessness to prevail. People have to be governed. And imagine you have someone in that you know who's killed seven people, and when you want to execute him, he says there no to aid him, there was no hadra. The Adam, where are the Adam? The Adam didn't see together, and you didn't do a drisha v'chakira. Our P halacha is absolutely right, but in order to establish a government, a country, to have shalom v'shalva and the ability to live, as Pirkei Avot says, pray for the welfare of the government, because if not for the government, ish chay eish et reyehu chayim below, we would eat each other up. The government is allowed to do what it wishes. And this is a very important concept. In the state of Israel, I'll say to the state of Israel's credit, they do not have a death penalty. They could very well have a death penalty. They do not have a death penalty. Is it good? Is it bad? From the point of view of halacha, we always felt, Baruch Hashem, there's no death penalty, there's no Edom, there's no Sanhedrin, there's no who can enforce a death penalty. Musmacha mishmi piyish. But I have to tell you, according to the letter of the law, they could very well have a death penalty. And if there's a debate, when I was a youngster growing up, so we used to have debating teams. Why you had a famous debating team. Steve Risky became famous, little Steve. As when you came up against them in a debate, you were in trouble. And Shlomo Riskin as a kid, Steve, I have to call him as I know him, I'm reliving it. So one of the main topics was, are you in favor of capital punishment? And you would debate against the Fordham University, St. John's University, Catholic, Jew. And of course, we always took the position that we are against capital punishment, and you can develop the ideas I've told you over from the Rav Tarish about Pan Tarish Bichtav. One is the strict din, one is the liberal din, one is Rachman. You can develop beautiful thoughts. But you see, if society has to be established and run properly, you have to execute. And the rabbis had this power. And with all the debate in the world, you can't change an open Gemara, which is an open Pesach in the Rambam. Okay, so we spoke about this last week. Michael, you seem perturbed. Excuse me?
For genocide.
I can only just say.
Holocaust,
oh, yeah, no. So crimes against the Jews. No, no. In Israel, on the books. I'm not. You're right. On the books, I took that for granted. Who knows what I'm saying? On the books, the law reads that there is a death penalty for crimes against the Jewish people, meaning genocide, and for someone who's a traitor. The only time that I know of that the state enforced that law was Eichmann.
Why isn't terrorism considered against crimes against humanity?
I've asked that question. I've spoken with people in the government, and they tell me that one of the factors why they don't execute a terrorist is very simple, because they're Jews all over the world, and they're Jews in Arab countries, and they're worried that if you execute an Arab with all the publicity in the modern world, in other words, you can't do it secretly, it'll create murder of Jews in France, in Tunisia, in Iran, in Yemen, in Canada. Look what's going on in Montreal today. And even in New York. So this is what I was told. But you're free to check it out.
Not executing them.
We have to wait. A prisoner exchange. We held up. Say that, gentlemen, I'm not running the country, and I can't claim expertise here. I humbly bow to the experts. Now, let me quote. Shalit and Shivit B'Samim Rosh, Kuf Tzadi Bet. By the way, just to interrupt for 1 second, I apologize. I was not at the cult of Friday night, not because of the rain. I was not there because Sutton Makatrig, when anything goes wrong, it's Erev Shabbos. Our electricity went out at 3 o'clock. We had a miracle that we found someone, and by 4:20 we had electricity again, but I had to get everything ready for Shabbos. I couldn't leave my wife alone. We were both totally washed out. So I apologize if you came to walk me home and suddenly you didn't find me. It was Rachmana Patre, force majeure, as they say in law. Okay, back here. Shalom Shivat Kutsadi Bet. And this Shiva he attributes to the Rashbam. Now again, he's a genius here. Because whenever you find collections of Shivat of Rishon in manuscripts, you will find them mixed together. The same thing with the Gainim. Because whoever collected these chivot, everything was done by hand. They collected here, the second, the third, the fourth, the fifth. So it wasn't only the Rush. And this chivot, he attributes to the Rashba. Fine. Kuf Sadi Bet, he tells the following story. Hachacham Reb Yude ben Vaka, Shliach Tzibur Shatz. I don't know what Vaka means. Again, someone who would know the language at that time could tell us. Maybe it's a name like Victor. Like we have funny sounding names, so that was a name at that time. As far as I know, Vaka is not a name from Tanakh. I just dealt with a lady today whose name is Kitsia, and I checked out, where did you get a name? You know, I checked it before I met her, because she's a very important person. She's the senior editor at Geffen, and I was blown over by her knowledge. But and the name is in Iyav. It's one of the daughters of Iyav from his second marriage, when he remarries after all that he's lost. So Kitsia is a biblical name. Vaka, you would have to know the period. I mean, Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, perhaps, could give an explanation. This would be his expertise. So this Reb Yehuda ben Vaka, Shatz. Shatz, again, whenever anyone is named Shatz, it means he descends from Shluchei Tzibur, that either they would Balei Tefillah, or they were governmental officials, they represented the Jews, Shatz, that's what the name comes from. And there's a Professor Shatz in YU, Shliach Tzibur. You want to know if you did properly, that you cut off the, you gave a psak, listen to this, to cut off the nose of the Yalda Almana Achat, a young widow, a young girl. So right away, look what you have here. Two reasons to pity her. Yalda. What does that mean, Yalda? People marry very young then. People die very young. Yalda, she can be all of 15, 16. Almana. No, I don't have to tell you, with a widow, I can only tell you that Malka and I came home Friday night and were invited out, and we said to each other, boy, we hope no one invites us out again, give us a chance to rest. Sure enough, the phone rang today, we're invited out next Friday night. So I said to, I signal Malka, absolutely yes. Why? The person inviting us is a widow. And when you read my book, what I learned from Baron Cutler, How to Treat a Widow, you'll understand why I try my best. God should give me strength and give me insight to always be extra nice to a widow. So here you have the Yaldar, Almana, and Yatzalav Kaladullah Pasuk. There was gossip about her that, to the rabbinic expression, continued gossip, continued rumors. In other words, it appears she did the sin. She had relations. She had an ongoing love affair with the Gentile. And Gam Hiyam Rakim, she said, yes, it's true. I became pregnant to this Gentile. I couldn't do a real Drisha B'chakira, because if I really pressed her, he was worried that she would leave the Jewish faith and go live with this Gentile. Kenafshak Shuraba Aro Hazer. And I want to tell you, nothing has changed. There are two gentlemen here who are not married. They should not listen to what I'm about to say. Nothing has changed. You see, not in Israel, not a girl who wants to come in Aliyah. A girl who wants to come in Aliyah is very different. But what impresses a young lady in our crowd? Ah, she goes out with a young man and he spends money on her. He is not a cheapskate. He shows he is benevolent, generous, seemingly has the means, has invested with Madoff, but has pulled some of it out in time. And it's exactly what it says here. I mean, this is so, the way he constructs it. Ubizbuz nechasim lo. He spends on her. He treats us royally. So, rabbim rananim acharecha. And everyone is gossiping, talking about it. And I gave the order, cut off her nose. Did I do the right thing? And he quotes Rabbeinu Asher, Yishmael Tzuro. Now, what does he mean, Rabbeinu Asher? Does he mean the Rush? I don't know. Could be. He's like writing to the Rashbah, and he says he got an order from the Rush, or Stam, Rabbeinu Asher, Yishmael Tzuro is a generic name. A Talmud Chacham named Rabbeinu Asher gave the order, cut off her nose, and the guy will part with her. Now, I don't have to tell you, everyone in this class is caught up with the Ger Toshav syndrome as you hear this question. Everyone. I don't want to talk about you. Why should I speak Lashon Hara about you? I'll talk about myself. I'm caught up with dual loyalty. On one hand, to live with a guy is a terrible thing. I'll show you in a second. On the other hand, how do you go and chop a young girl's nose off who's an almana? In the Western world, don't we have a concept, love conquers all? Nothing should stand in the way of love, personal happiness. We're caught up here with a tremendous problem. And anyone in the rabbinate, how do you talk? Someone comes to you, we're only sitting in a building. I'm only sitting here because of a similar story where someone came to the Rav and said, my daughter's going with a non-Jew. How can I talk her out of it? And the Rav didn't know how. He sent her to the Rebbetzin. And the Rebbetzin talked her out of it. I only wish I knew how the Rebbetzin did it, because this is an achievement. But what do you do? Cut off her nose. Nope, I don't have to tell you. In a closed community where Spinoza, Spinoza, and everyone else is a Torah Jew. And by the way, that was one of the corrections that the senior editor made, And I explained to her she was wrong, and she admitted it. I used the word Torah Jew. She wanted Torah observant Jew. I said, no, what I'm talking about a few hundred years ago, every Jew was observant. A Torah Jew means a Torah community. Today you would say Torah observant, because for the sake of argument, I didn't know that Barak put on tefillin this morning. I questioned it. Did he or didn't he? What do you think?
I don't think so.
You don't think that? So we have to say.
Do we have evidence that he did?
No, I'm saying I don't know.
Well, why give him any credit?
But no, say that. I don't want to give him discredit either. I want to be fair. But please. God, you're carried away by the news. Don't believe everything you read. Relax yourself. We're going to worry about Menuvolim. He's a Menuvol for a different reason. He divorced his wife and ran off with that girl that he ran around with in the army. That's a Menuvol. And his wife was a lovely person, if you recall, is a lovely person. But that's the world today. Anyway, this is a real dilemma from the point of view of a Torah community when everyone was from. They put Spinoza in Cheirim. Today, if you put Spinoza in Cheirim, everyone will laugh at you. You all know I think it was Shmuel Yosef Agnew who coined the expression in Yerushalayim, either you're in Cheirim or you're putting someone into Cheirim. And he said, basically, one week you're in Cheirim, and the next week you're putting the other one into Cheirim. So, today, Cheirim means nothing. But this is when there was a closed society. They closed to cut off her nose to make an example that Jewish girls shouldn't be fooled by Gentile boys. So that certainly is the attitude of a ger enochi makam. This is different Torah said at the start of the year, giving the course a context, ger v'toshav. From the point of view of a toshav in the modern world, I think I would make a strong case it doesn't do any good to cut off a girl's nose. The outcry, you're cruel, the rabbinate, I don't have to tell you what has been said about the rabbinate. I don't have to tell you how my face was smacked just a few weeks ago in Flatbush, that if there's a rabbinic will, there's a halachic way. Blue Greenberg is absolutely right, and the rabbis are the cruelest, most terrible people in the world, that they don't take Rabbi Rachman's suggestion, Lavkiya Kedushin, and solve the problem of the self-inflicted or the man-made aguda. So I don't have to tell you, if we're going to start cutting off people's noses today, I don't think it would help. But yes, Nachman, said a word yet. Yeah, go ahead.
Being there's not a burden on the Gemara about cutting off noses, can't you say that these are the people who were Toshav, that they were living in the Middle Ages and when people were...
I'll tell you something else. When they say cut off the nose, I don't know if you take it literally.
A picture on the cover of Newsweek a few weeks back of a girl in Afghanistan.
Yeah, they cut off the nose. Could be. You're right. You're making a good case. But nevertheless, the Rishonim permitted it to make an example. Whatever, they disfigured the woman, whatever they did. It's an interesting question, but I don't know of a case of a man where they did it to men. But I'll tell you, it could be psychologically when a man is living with a Gentile woman, she's willing to convert. A man generally doesn't give in. It's a difference in mentality. Until modern times, the woman went the way of the man. This is why you take, even in the Torah world, it's a din d'oraita. You have to take your husband's last name. You follow Levet Avotam. You have to, religion goes through the mother, but to know 1, 2, 3, we go. But even in the Gentile world, you took the last name of the husband, because he was the more dominant Sarah Chutz, I would say. The woman, of course, was the Sarah Pnim. And they just interviewed a guy in Staten Island who's married 70 years. They look Jewish. The couple looks Jewish. They're in their early 90s. They're married 70 years. And they asked him, what's the secret? And they look terrific. And they ask him, what's the secret of your happy marriage? He says two words. Yes, dear. That's the secret of his happy marriage. So I tell you, that guy gets the Rakefet Award for great wisdom. Now, why? So you see that there's a dual allegiance here. There's a dialectical tension. You can all understand it. Now, but there's more than that. Here there's another factor. What is the other factor? Gentlemen, the Reb Shaul Berlin is living at a time where he desperately wants to come out of the ghetto. He desperately wants to be modern. He desperately wants to be part of the big world. Reb Shaul Berlin is dreaming of a world like we live in. And he understands one basic concept. If you come out of the ghetto, the Jew has to give up his police power. A rabbi is reduced to a spiritual leader who has no jurisdiction, no practical power. He can preach, he can teach, he can plead, he can cajole. He cannot slap someone's face. All of you know from the memoir literature that the Netziv once slapped the student's face. According to what most memoir literature says, he suspected he shaved with a razor. Do you know how much was written about that slap? Do you know that the students went on strike, that the great Netziv had to apologize to the student? Do you know on that question of the Netziv, you could write a master's thesis, Beligusma. That's how much has been written. And you can get endless sources, by the way, from Making of a Gagin. Reb Nosson Kamenetsky, his knowledge is breathtaking. And you can see endless sources on that slap. But outside of the ghetto, no one slaps. You have a government. And the concept of living outside of the ghetto is that you're an American, you're a German, you're a Canadian, you're an Englishman, you're a Russian, you're a Tunisian, you're an Egyptian. Whatever identity you have. No, you Simcha Elokim Kefrayim Ucha Menashe. I told you my vart. It's the Rav's vart. I later heard it from the Rav. But everyone says it. I then saw the Malbim says it. Ephraim Ucha Menashe. They lived among the Egyptians. They dressed like Egyptians. They thought like Egyptians. But when they came to see Yaakov Avinu, they changed their clothes and they spoke like Jews. And all of us understand when we have dual identity, we have to surrender judicial power, police power, punitive power to the authorities. If you don't, it's total hefkerut. There can be no normal, orderly life. Tell me, who forced the Jews to say this 20 years after this tshuva was written? Napoleon. All of you studied Napoleon, the Sanhedrin, the 12 questions. Among the questions, do the rabbis have judicial power? And no one, you know, when you study it superficially, what's Napoleon asking? But when you go a little bit deeper, Napoleon was a genius, or the people who prepared the questions were geniuses. And what Napoleon was saying to the rabbis, I'm willing to let you out of the ghetto, but you have to play by the rules. It's a ball game outside the ghetto. You can't go to Shea Stadium and watch the Mets or Yankee Stadium or Shea, what's it, City Stadium today, am I right? What's the new name? The City Field. You can't go to City Field, you can't go to Yonkel Stadium and say you want 4 outs, you want 2 strikes, you want 5 balls, you want 4 outfielders. You're changing the rules. That you know what goes on with the National League and the American League over a designated hitter. Do I have to tell you? It's imbecilic. You have 2 leagues, and when they meet, and what rule and who do you follow? And the implications when the pitcher doesn't bat, and it's a different ballgame. But in order to run a society, you have to have a set of rules. What's amazing is that the Psamim Rosh, attributing it to the Rashba, with all the knowledge he had of the Rishonim and everything I showed you last week, he paskins like halacha, they did a terrible act. He totally pushes aside the concept of a Beit Din acting outside of the formal requirements of halacha. And he recognizes, I want you to understand, he recognizes how terrible it is for a Jew to live with a Gentile. And it's not that he minimizes the sin, but you can't to use the colloquialism, you can't take the law into your own hands. Now, why is it such a terrible sin? Yeah, take a look. Hilchat Isuri Bir, Perek Yud Bet, Halach Aleph, Halacha Bet. Let me ask you a question. Living with a Gentile, and I have to tell you, this problem, again, if you're in the rabbinate in America, whenever a Kohen comes to you to marry a girl who's a Balat Shuvah, who was on a college campus, you have a problem. A lot has been written about it. Do you question? Do you ask? No, what's wrong? A Jew and a Gentile in America, in Western world, not just America, America, Russia, England, Canada, in the Western world, we grow up together, we live together, we go to school together. What's wrong? And take a look. Yisrael Shabal Gaya, Misham Matolam. When a Jew lives with a Gentile, a male with a female, or a Yisraelit Shinibalala Gai, Derech Yishut, when they got married, Hare Elu Lokin Mincha Torah. It is an Isa Dioraita. Shenema Lo Titchatein Bum. Bitcha Lo Titein Levno. Ubito lo tikach levincha. And this is an Isa Dioraita. However, look in Halacha Bet. Velo asra Torah adelech hat nut. The Isa is only when they marry. Aval habal hagoya derech snut. Someone had relations with a Gentile. Derech snut. No marriage. She can't be a pilegah, she can't be a concubine, so they use the word harlotry. But it simply means an illicit relationship. Makin otom makit madat, mitivrei sofrim. The rabbis have the right to give him malkut. We have to stop him from getting married. And in yichadalo bislut, and this is paraphrasing the Gemara, it's a Gemara in Avodah Zarah, there are references to in Brachot, that if he lives with her in one apartment, he's chayav, nida, shifcha, goya, zona, it's all a din derabbanan, it's called nashkaz in the Gemara. V'im lo yichad alo, but if it only happens occasionally, he's only chayav nishim goya. V'chol hachiyuvim ha'ela midivrehem. And all these chiyuvim are only the Rabbanan. So why, if it's only an Isa the Rabbanan, why is that so terrible? Why is it so horrible? Look into Perek Yud Bet Halacha Zayin, and this Rambam is very important in today's society. Avon zafo pishen vomitat beiten al yehei chal beinecha. Ele yesh bo chefsed she'en b'chol harayat kamoto shehaben min ha'eva b'nohu b'chol davar u'b'chal Yisrael yechashay v'yapa pishu mamsa ha'ben min ha'goya eino b'nohu shenema ki yasir et pincha me'acharay me'sir oto me'yiyot acharay Hashem Elokim. Now that's a very important Rambam, it's common sense. What is so terrible? So you live with a Gaya. Ribbono Shel Olam, we're living at a time when so many Jews do Isurim Derabbanan. Why are we so opposed? Why are we so upset? Because this ultimately destroys the Jewish people. When you're married to a non-Jewish woman or you live with a non-Jewish woman, you father non-Jewish children. And it means the strength of a Jew, the ability of a Jew to propagate, to enhance, to multiply the Jewish people, it all becomes non-Jewish. Why is this Rambam so important today? And you should know, the Summer Rosh quotes it. He recognizes he's not in favor of intermarriage. Don't misunderstand. Why is this Rambam so important? You have the tremendous debate today. Geirut. Who is a Jew? Well, if you read Shabbat's Makor Rishon, Friday's Makor Rishon, they interview Rav Zalmanovich. It's a rabbi of one of the Moshavim, Machnuot, I believe. Talmud Chacham, Chevron graduate in the Rabbanut, 40 years already. And he says very simply that if you're Machmir and Geirut, you create his total assimilation among the Jewish people. Because there are hundreds of thousands of Russian women who are not halachically Jewish, even though they're Mizera Beit Yisrael. I'm quoting a terminology of Achronim. They're going to have hundreds and hundreds of thousands of children, and these children are not Jewish. And look what you're doing. You're creating intermarriage, hitbolalut, right within the state of Israel. And here, remember, we won't even know they're not Jewish. That intensifies the problem 1,000 times over. But in Chutz Laaretz, you marry a Gentile, all these mixed marriages, all these intermarriages, we read about it. Remember in the Monday class, she keeps her religion, he keeps his religion. Ultimately, the loser is Torah Hashem Tamima. The kids are lost forever. So this Rambam is very important, and he does not dismiss the Rambam at all, but he speaks about how can you take off the nose? Where are the Eidim? Where are all the Klalei Halacha? And he quotes the Gemara that even a Knas we don't have Bisman Hazer. And how Chazal went out of the way, Ayin Tachet Ayin is Mamein Tachet Ayin. And we went out of our way not to harm someone physically. Allah Kama Vakama, we were talking about an Isa Derabbanan, and even though it's a terrible Isa, and even though as a result of this Isa, you will have children who are not Jewish, but nevertheless, how can we go against all of tradition? And when we don't have Mismach, and we don't have a Beis Din, and we'll have in every city, every Talmud Chacham, depending upon his kana'ut laHashem, he can do terrible things. And he says, no, we are not allowed to do this bizman hazeh. And Allah kama v'kama, when you live in a world where there's temptation, where sin is at your door, we have to go out of the way not to do anything extreme. And he says, I don't want to elaborate further. If we do something extreme, it can affect the entire Jewish people. And what is he referring to here? The modern world. Gentlemen, no one is forced to remain Jewish. Shem Yirachem, you all know what goes on in the world. Someone just told me on Friday night, why you musmach? Why is it tzaddikim? People I know for 50, 60 years. A family that was extremely close to the Rav. Plays a big role in the Rav's coming to Boston in the 30s. And she tells me that her cousin's son just came to Israel, proselytizing a Jew for Jesus. So you see, it's an open world. When you push someone away, he's literally describing the American scene. When you push someone away, he says, you don't know what the results will be. And Allah had kama v'kama, where you have a yalda, and you have a almana, and you have a guy who's spending money on her, push her away, you're pushing her out of the Jewish people. And we cannot allow the Rabbanim to take off noses bizman hazeh. And then he says, and you write to me in your question that the local ruler gave you permission. So he writes back, I mean, this is so modern, it's overwhelming. He gave you permission to punish her. It doesn't mean to take off her nose. It means to put her into jail. Bevet Asurim ad shetit cholel data alecha. And gentlemen, this raises the whole question. Again, you can do research on it. Asaf has reference to it. It seems that in Eastern Europe, I don't know what went on in the Sephardic world, but in Eastern Europe, in the big shuls, where you walked in the foyer, there was a cage, and in that cage, there were people they put into jail, and that was the way, I imagine they didn't keep them long, they embarrassed them, they were there over Shabbat, over a certain period of time. But you see that the concept of a jail, what we call kippah in the Gemara and Sanhedrin, already exists in the responsa literature. So that when you talk about jails and the modern concept of taking away freedom and punishment and incarceration, you're dealing with a concept that already was in the Torah world throughout the millennium. And
where
that,
and
excuse me?
Where and when?
There's sources in the 1500s, the 1600s, literally. But all this disappears with modern times. You follow me?
That's all in Eastern Europe, Western
Europe? I don't know. This is all in the Ashkenazic world. Western and Eastern Europe was one of the same at that time. The Sephardic world, I don't know what they had. I don't know. I've never researched. And as I recall from Asaf, and I believe Jewish Life in the Middle Ages by Abraham, that was a classic work from more than 100 years ago. It was done in England. And as I recall, it was in the Ashkenazic world they actually had examples of shuls where there were cages where people were incarcerated. And excuse me?
Like
they used to have in the I don't know if that sucks. How could they cut bases? Could be. Why? Well, Professor Lyman would know something like this.
Yeah, story about yeah.
Professor Lyman would know. This is esoteric knowledge that he would specialize in. But I know in general that the Vesum of Rosh is absolutely correct. He knows what he's talking about. Hold on, everyone's test. Instead of Michael,
yeah. I think I'm getting lost in your words. But were you arguing before for mass conversion?
No, Chas v'Chalila, I said the fear that he understood fully the problem, and what he was saying was that if you come down very hard and you start chopping people's nose off in the modern world, they'll run away and
no,
live with
Goyim. You spoke about the problem in Israel
today.
No, I've spoken about the problem many times. All I'm saying is that when it comes to conversion in Israel, we have to understand the global picture. And we can set up standards lachatchila,
right,
but we can't invalidate Geirut l'mafreya. There's no such concept. Because once they are Mekayim, a few mitzvot, they're Jews 100%. And all the sources say that. And today with the battle between Rabbi Ovadia and Rabbi Yashiv, frankly I don't understand Rabbi Yashiv's position. It goes against the halacha. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Vajir is absolutely right. Now, I would use the word easing up, but I'm in favor of encouraging and doing everything in our power, like a rebotum, and I like the idea of the army they assign every would-be convert to a religious family. You know, we're doing the best we can. You want to set up standards? Okay, but the standards have to be shavu l'chol nefesh. I'm not in favor of having a standard that if the woman is wearing pants, you retroactively annul the conversion. Now, they claim that happened. I can't believe it. I can't believe rabbis are such hamayarets. But anything is possible in modern times.
That they're going on.
Yeah, for instance?
That a child who is trying to be shomer kashrut, the shomer mitzvot,
right,
isn't permitted to convert because he lives with his parents.
I know in America we did convert such children.
No,
I'm talking about Gedolei Israel. If they're over 12 and 13 and you see they can handle themselves, it's like Balei Tshuva. You know how many shilas I've had over the years, kids who were teenagers, their homes were trafed. What do the kids do? By the way, I want to tell you in parentheses, on this very topic, I have the book here, I'll show it to you, not this week, but next week, Rabbi Riskin It's coming out. There's a book launch this Saturday night, I believe it is. It's coming out with a book. I've read it. It's called Listening to God. It's basically his autobiography within the context of drushot and stories. It's a la Riskin. If you know Rav Shlomo, it's Mamish Riskin. And you'll see there what he talks about with homes that aren't kosher and being able to eat and what he went through and what others go through. And there's a book by my student who's a Rebbe today, the Mekadshei Hashem Rebbe in Woodmere, Rabbi Moshe Weinberg. To recognize the name? Does he have a formal Siddiq title, or is just the Woodmere Rebbe?
Eish Kodesh.
Eish Kodesh, right. Eish Kodesh, right.
My second question is Lamasa.
Yep.
If a child has a Jewish mother,
right,
is the child automatically eligible to be married here by the Orthodox rabbi?
Why not?
There's no question, there's no issue, right?
I not for me. Yitzchak had more experience. I don't think there's a problem. If the child has a Jewish mother, he's Jewish.
Meaning the father's not.
The child is Jewish. What's the problem?
So there's no issue and there's no question about marriage here, right?
As far as I know.
Or in America.
Right, of course.
Here, the rabbanim are terrible. In America, yes.
You
know.
Can make them jump through hoops and start asking for their grandparents to go.
But what if the mother is Jewish? The mother is Jewish.
Yeah, but then they start making all sorts of problems for them.
Orthodox rabbis in America marry a child with a Jewish mother.
Absolutely.
And you don't think there's any issue or question, right?
In absolutely.
In America.
But here, the rabbis won't do it.
Why won't they do it here?
Because the boy sons are different.
I can't believe that. The kid is Jewish. I don't know. Anyway, you ask me la halacha.
If you get a job in the Misrata Panim or the Moritz of that, you have to take a personality test. And if you're nice, you're welcome.
Right. Okay, to say this. Shamati, I don't want to go into this. I don't know. The rabbi that I've dealt with here, if I had a case here, I would send them to my daughter and let my daughter handle it. Okay? And my daughter.
Do you get percentage?
No. She wouldn't. Many kids. My daughter happens. I hope she's not. I want to tell you. My daughters happen to be Sidkaniyot. I know my daughters. I'm overwhelmed by what I know about them, what I find out about them. So I can tell you about my eldest daughter. You should know what a reputation, what she has done pro bono. It's overwhelming. God should bless her. Okay, but let's not talk about it. Let's go further.
I know this isn't a klutz kasha.
Yeah.
But if you have a situation, which I know of for a fact,
right,
where the mother is Jewish,
right,
she's raising the child Jewishly,
right,
in Hebrew school,
right,
you know,
right,
what
right,
is possible,
right?
Isn't that situation as good or better than two Jews raising a child in a completely non-religious home?
So yes, well, I absolutely agree with you that there's much more chance that the kid of a Jewish mother going to yeshiva, to a day school, will come out a lot more observant than a kid being raised by Jewish parents that don't give a hoot about Yiddishkeit. I agree with you.
Thank you.
Okay, what's
can
the
I
problem?
Can I quote you on that?
Yeah, it's common sense. What's the quote?
The Rebbe explained was the argument between Rav Avadia and Rav
Yashav. Rav Avadia, Rav Yashav, al regel achat. I see you're not reading the Israeli press, but the shooting is very strong. Rav Avadia Paskin, that all the gerut in the army that has been done until now is good, and Rav Yashav said many of them are not gerut. What I gather is, and again, Yitzhak, I can't talk about something. What I gather, and remember, I haven't spoken with Chaim, I know Rav Chaim Drukman, I can tell you Rav Chaim Drukman is a Yiddish tzaddik. I know the military rabbinate, everyone there, without exception, is a Shomer Torah mitzvah, the Shtikel Talmud Chacham 100%. It's a very interesting rabbinate. In my time, the military rabbinate was colorblind. Didn't matter if you were from YU, if you were from Mekas Harav, you were from Hebron, Panovich, all that mattered was you were Talmud Chacham and Yerei Shemayim. Now, the rabbinate runs a whole course of Gerut because they get all these Russian kids, and many of them are not Jewish. And in the army, you start to feel, you know, you want to become Jewish. So they run the course they assign them. I don't know what the percentage is, but it seems...
The soldiers are lacking themselves?
They can't be forced into it. God forbid. Chas v'chalimah. So they come to the Rav Tzvayi and they say, we want to convert. The army is a tremendous education. You have no idea what goes on in the army. God bless the army. It is as I said the other day, second only to the rebirth of Torah in modern times, is that the Jews can have an army and that one Jew can salute another Jew. Have you ever seen that in your life, that one Jew should salute another Jew? My wife almost fainted once when my son-in-law was giving her a lift in his army car with his driver, and he stopped at the where they hitchhike out of Jerusalem, and the soldiers there, he got out to ask where they're going, because he was going to the Matek Lali in Tel Aviv, the Central Army Post, and they saluted him. So my wife came home and told me, they saluted him, you know, he was a high ranker. I said, this is a miracle, you have to make Shechiyonu when you see one Jew saluting another Jew. So they run a course in the army, they do Brit Mila, you understand what's involved, they do everything, they assign them. Now, some of them don't become total Shomrei Shabbos. This is what I understand. While they're in the army, kosher is kosher. Shabbos, you don't have to work. There's nothing done in the army Chilul Shabbos. According to law of the Israeli government, the law of the army, but Kuda, there is no Chilul Shabbos. Bitachon Shotef is Bitachon Shotef. That has nothing to do with Shabbos. That the army gave my grandson last week a pen that with invisible ink, that's a chumrah. Meika Hadin is allowed to write, but it's a beautiful chumrah. I don't want to go, I can lecture on this, it's not for now. Now, so let's say someone converts in the army, and he's not total Shomer Shabbos. Is the conversion chal? Absolutely. Shivut of Rav Moshe Feinstein, Shivut of the Achiezer, Shivut of the Beit Yitzchak, Shivut of the Melamed Lahoel. You can't. You look into the Gemara in Yevamah Daf Mem Vav Amud Bet Mem Zayin Amud Aleph. What do you teach a convert? Very little. According to the Gemara, he didn't know everything. He only knew part. Look into the Gemara in Shabbos. There's a Klal Gadol Samach Bet Samach Gimel, the whole sugya. He doesn't know about Shabbos. And yet the conversion is good. So Rav Meisher explains that what is conversion when you convert to what you think Judaism is? Nope, the average convert converts. Many of them, or some of them, look at Netanyahu. That's a role model. Look at Livni. She's a role model. Look at Lieberman. He's a role model. Lieberman Dafka may be a good role model. It could be he's not Machal Shabbos, but perhaps he could very well be. I don't know. I know his wife and daughter and grandchildren are not. That sets the Kaniyot. But Lieberman could be he's a role model. So you can't retroactively. The only time you consider conversion is not Chal, is when someone walked away from the conversion and went into the church, and you see the conversion is meaningless. You know, so that's the machloket. Rav Avadya says you cannot retroactively annul these conversions. We can put more stress on, we can put tanayim on, we can tell them we don't want you to lie, we want you to tell the truth, we want you to be Shomer Shabbos. Aaron Rakepit believes with all his heart and soul that if a Russian would sit in this class and be exposed to Torah and Yerush Shemayim, Jewish history, a Jewish heartbeat, he would be the greatest Jew in the world. And Baruch Hashem, I have a track record. There are people listening who totally left Yiddishkeit and came back belay v'nefesh. There's a Korean woman, I told this story, when I came to America, the OU asked me to meet with her. She's a total Shomeret Shabbat today. Do you say that? I believe Tamu Re'u Kitov. I believe in the power of Torah. But Rav Avadya paskens what he paskens. Rav Yashiv, now again, I don't know whether it's Rav Yashiv or those around him retroactively the conversions are not halal. Now they want to have civil marriage. They want to split the Jewish people irrevocably. Talking about it may be. Again, I hope I read incorrectly in the Haredi press over the weekend, but they're now floating a trial balloon. Split the Jewish people. Keep a safe at Yuchsim. Let there be a simple marriage. Rav Avadya stands very firm and strong. Put to a vote, Rav Avadya will win, because the Israeli population, the Hasidim essentially, and the Sfardim, and people like myself, will support Rav Avadya. So I think he will win, but it's a very serious issue, and that's what's going on right now.
Another question. So doesn't Rambam say that a person who has relations with the Goy is getting karet in the very Kabbalah?
Not karet, he says, makot, I just read the Rambam, he says, makot madot midivrehim. It means a rabbinic punishment, but it's not an Isidioraita, but it's a terrible Isa, because it creates assimilation and intermarriage. Now, those people who want to be more makhil with Zera Beit Yisrael, such as Reb Chaim Amstalan and others, say very simply, conversion in Israel is different than conversion anywhere else in the world. Because in Israel, everyone knows about Shabbat. Everyone knows about Kashrut. It is very easy to observe Kashrut. Everyone lights Hanukkah candles. Nobody, I mean, 99% of the population, 98, does not eat chametz on Pesach. In other words, everyone knows about matzah. So everyone knows about Shavuot. The newspapers are printed with a green color as of Shavuot. You'll see it with your own eyes. So that here, it's a lot easier to convert. This is what Rav Gorman spoke about. Part of the conversion, Torah is also a national observance. And here there is the national hue, the national coloration. You understand what I'm saying? I'm using fancy words. Give me a simpler word. Hue, coloration, configuration. It's built in to living in Israel. Now, you want to know further on Rav Yashiv? There's terrible hypocrisy here because I lived through the Lange controversy. I lectured on it here. Again, I can't go into it now. Lo amaretz anochi. I know the story inside out. I know the lumpness inside out. I know what the Rav held. I know the private conversations. They jumped on Rav Gorin for declaring Langer a guy that the conversion was never chal. Numi manashach. You hold you can retroactively annul conversion. That's exactly what Rav Gorin did. How do you criticize him? Now, why did Rav Gorin retroactively annul the conversion? Because the guy, after he converted, went to funerals and crossed himself like a believing Polish Catholic. And Rav Gorin found testimony of social workers in Tel Aviv, Mesichot Lefi Tumam. In other words, you're writing a letter to your girlfriend in 2011. Are you thinking that someone may find that letter 100 years from now? You follow? And they're writing your life story. You're not thinking about that letter. When you write to her of your problems, your difficulties, learning in an American environment, English, why you compared to Eish HaTorah, right? You know what I'm saying? You're not thinking 100 years now. Someone finds that letter. It's a fabulous document because we have to assume you're telling the truth. It reveals who you are. You're not writing it for people to read 100 years from now. Rav Gorin found social workers' reports in Tel Aviv about this dysfunctional family, and they called the father a Polish guy. Got it? Mesiach lefi tumam, a Polish guy. David, listen to me carefully. Well, there's a question about Mamzeri, because she married a second. No. I understand. They wanted to be mocked to the children. But I'm just telling him, and then they had Eidot that he boiled chaza with neighbors in Haifa, that his mother-in-law wouldn't let him into the kitchen, if I recall correctly, but they boiled the chaza in the bathroom and had chaza. So Rav Gorin retroactively said, there's no conversion here whatsoever. Rav Meisha has one shuva like this from Europe. Rav Gorin, yeh hayalo amalas smoch, but mimonav shach. If Rav Gorin can't retroactively annul conversion, and they hit him over the head a million times over, how do you come along 40 years later at an old conversion? And if you can an old conversion, how did you dare criticize Rav Gorin? You follow me? So this is current contemporary Israeli rabbinic politics. Don't get involved. Just learn Torah. Be a Yirei Shemayim. And always try to help people. Again, I have a lot to say on this. I spoke about that in front of Rabbi Lichtenstein last year. And those of you who recall, I got a hug afterwards. So read my sefer, study my work on the Rav, where the Rav describes what the role of a Rav is, a rabbi's role. Okay, this is the issue. It's a burning issue. It's a very important Rambam. And he's writing this tshuva before Napoleon. Napoleon wouldn't disagree with one word in this tshuva. And I got news for you. Neither would we disagree today. If you're coming out of the ghetto, you're living in a big world, you have to submit to the secular authorities. Shabbat, Kashrut, Tarat Mishpacha, that's none of their business. But the public thoroughfare, imagine you're a murderer. Could you imagine Busby Siegel says before the judge, how could you sentence me to the Sing Sing, to the electric chair if you don't have two kosher edim who are Shomer Shabbos and they didn't give me hasra and I didn't respond al Menat King? You understand what I'm saying? But do you know who Bugsy Siegel was? Oh boy, you got to know. Bugsy Siegel was an RJJ graduate. And he was one of the biggest gangsters. He built Las Vegas. He was killed by the mafia or something. You read about him. You want to know more? You're not allowed to sit where you're sitting. I'm not allowed to sit here. Do you know why? One of the biggest balabatim who built the yeshiva was a balabas named Rothstein. He was one of the big shots in Kehilat Yeshurin. He gave Rabbi Revel a fortune of money. His son, what was his son's first name? Arnold. The father was Yosef. The son was my name, Arnold Rothstein. He was the gambler who fixed the 1919 World Series. The Black Sox. David, will you fill in Ephraim? I hold you responsible. Ephraim, it almost ended baseball. I'm looking so forward a month from now to forget all my sorrows, to see what the Yankees are doing, to be a kid again. It adds years to my life. You don't know my age. I'm an old man. I'm an old man. Baloney. When I speak baseball, I'm younger than you. And you'll see it in my new book. I explained it in detail with Lundis. So, please, how are you sitting there? Yosef Rothstein paid for your chair. His son almost destroyed America. Almost 91 years ago. It's in the record books. Check it out. Gentlemen, let's go forward.
How about having as an appendix in the book a transcript of your lecture on Joe DiMaggio?
No. Say that. Leave that for future generations. Now. So they talk about put him in jail. And he says, and here, pardon me, all the feminists, I apologize to you. He says, women, we have to forgive them. We have to be more benevolent. Women can be easily swayed. Men can talk to them. And men can lead them away. But chas v'chalila, how can you go and harm a Jewish girl? How can you go and take away her beauty? How can you go and do things like this? And he says, you're opening the door to mass assimilation. These girls will leave Yiddishkeit, they'll run off with Goyim. This is not the way to approach it. And Allah Kamavakam, he's talking about coming out of the ghetto. He's talking at a time that there's modernity. He's talking at a time where girls have choice. And he says, this is not the way to act. He says, I forgive you. You were misinformed. The rabbi paskened what he did. But if you would listen to me, you would never have done such an act. And it's signed, Shlomo Ba'Avraham Zal Ben Aderet. It is signed by the Rashba. I need not tell you, this is a classic statement of the B'Samim Rosh, struggling to come out of the ghetto, struggling to make his peace with the dual existence of a Jew, throwing away all that Jewish tradition had to say. Rabbis have no power on a police level out of the ghetto. And if you notice, in the state of Israel, no one has ever fought a battle that rabbis should have police power. the laws of family purity, meaning marriage, divorce, gerut, the hands of the rabbinate. There they have police power. There they can throw someone into jail. You all know that if the rabbanim say you have to give the get, and you refuse to give the get, they can have all types of injunctions against you. No bank account, no charge account, no check account, no license for the work you do if you need a license, no passport, you cannot leave the country. Even more than that, they can throw you into jail. And yours truly, right in this building, I can show you exactly where it's right in this floor. I laid a trap with the police for a student of mine who was refusing to give a get. And when he walked out of the room, the police jumped on him and led him away in handcuffs. Put into jail. What?
A Gris guy?
No, it's before Gris. Or maybe already Gris existed. No. He was on the BMT faculty already. He studied with me. He was a madrich. He studied with me in a few years. He never studied in Gris. He already had smicha when Gris came into the world. And I predicted exactly what would happen. I say they're going to lock him up. He's going to become the rabbi to the svadim in the jail. They're going to that kachaber. No, but he was a chassidish guy, and they worshipped the ground he walked on. And his wife made the bad mistake of running back to Kew Gardens Hills. Had she not run back, she would have gotten to get here. Anyway, he finally gave a get a few years later. Destroyed her life. Destroyed his life. They had to publish a full-page ad, ask your parents, Nachum, in Jewish press, apologizing to him for besmirching him, and then he finally gave a get. He never remarried, she never remarried, neither of them had children. So the rabbis in the area of get have power, but not outside. If Yitzchak catches a crook tonight, he's not going to bring him to the rabbis, he's going to call the police. And here there's total acquiescence that police power beyond Dinei Ishut is in the hands of the general authorities who run the state of Israel. Should it be Al-Pidin? Avada. It has to be Mishpatavri. You have to combine. You have to see. We have to run a benevolent system. We have to try. In the jails they reach out. They have classes. They have people come in. L'hachzir b'tshuvah. The police are interested in that because they find there's a much higher percentage of criminals who remain straight and don't go back to jail if Hein Chozrim b'tshuvah. Among the Svadim it works, among the Ashkenazim it doesn't work. Among the Svadim you'll see murderers, gangsters being standing before the judge wearing kippah. So this is Israel, but no one says give the rabbis police authority. When it
You're
comes,
kidding.
When it, what?
You really believe that?
Believe what?
That the Haredi population doesn't really have, to a certain extent, police power?
No, that's what Sneed, you're talking about the Sneed squads, and when they act out of, when they overstep the boundary, the police step in and they've arrested people who have gone to jail right now, etc. But I'll come back to the chuppah, the kedushin. I just want to say.
Don't they have the idea that emulsion is anybody who reports
But say that you're dealing with Haredi mentality. That's not halachic mentality. A lot has been written on that in New York, in Brooklyn, what's going on, etc. Now, to go one step further, which is of tremendous interest, you should know that in the state of Israel, what about a person who's already in jail? So he says, I don't need a passport. I don't need a visa. I don't need a check account. Go fly a kite. Let her drop dead. I'm not giving you that. You should know that my daughter was among those instrumental, and it's a tremendous credit to Knesset Yisrael that they passed the law a number of years ago that anyone in jail, the rabbis can order he be put into solitary confinement. No other person, only jailers have that power. The rabbis have it. And there were two cases of men who refused to give a get, one at the end of 24 hours, one at the end of 48 hours. They both gave gittin to their wives. So in Israel, you can have police power, but it's limited to Dinei Ishur. In Chutz Laaretz, unfortunately, they will not formally grant any police power, even in Dinei Ishur. Okay. Atkan this tshuva. Let me start introduction. Yeah, yes, Mendel. Wait, give me a second. Baruch atot Mendel. Let me
show you.
In terms of
solitary confinement,
yeah.
Do you want to make an argument that it's already bordering on harem in terms of the kofen? It sounds like.
Well, what are you trying to say? The solitary confinement is equal to a harem? Well, oh, get no. In Israel, it's not a problem altogether because it's a Jew. That's the Rambam in Hilchot Gerushin. What's the Perek Bet? Gemara says, the only problem in America is it's goyim, it's get musa. Here it's Jews, it's not a problem. The Rabbanim, not a problem whatsoever. By the way, when he gives the get, they ask him, are you giving this get on your own free will? There's no kfiyah here. And if he answers this kfiyah, he goes right back to solitary confinement.
No.
You're allowed. That's the Rambam. What do you want out of here? Look at the Rambam. Okay. Gentlemen.
You have a better faith in humanity.
Okay. I can. If you want one story of my daughter, she always says that she regrets she didn't. It was before they had these little videos in your phone, you know, it was years ago. So she tells the story. There was this Haredit woman who was sent to her by the Eid Haredit Beit Din. Now, you have to know, the Eid Haredit Beit Din has a fabulous reputation for honesty and for insight. And it's like the Heksha. I once asked in the OU, what's the best Heksha in Israel? They told me the Badatz of the Eid Haredit cooperates with us. They know about ingredients. They're fabulous. I understand also Bell's operates on that level, that they know about chemicals and computerization. And excuse me? Bells. So they have a terrific reputation. So they had this case that they felt that the regular Beit Din and my daughter in particular might be able to handle it better. What was the story? A Haredit woman, her husband was a big businessman. He traveled all over and he had a mistress in every port. And he was in France. And he has my daughter gets a tzav to arrest him. So she now has in her hands the tzav, but she doesn't have the man. A squealer calls her anonymously and tells her, he's here now, shacked up on the Rechov Tzafania. I didn't even forget, with a mistress, I don't know what you want to call her, a prostitute, but an Israeli one, a call girl. So my daughter calls the police, and she describes it in 3 minutes, the squad car arrives with a driver and another policeman, and the guy, the other policeman says, my daughter gets things in the ear, and he says, So the driver says, Al tidak, fahayiti beseret hazeh. Don't worry, I've been in this before. There's a tzav to arrest this guy. They get to the hotel, or this whatever in Sofania, and there he is. They handcuff him, take him to jail. The guy was just besides himself, and you could see, my daughter said, you could see his clothes, wealthy, up to date, a trim beard, you know. And so the next morning, my daughter comes in, you know, the wife, to give a get, and he comes out of jail, and he's disheveled, he had no shave, and you could see he was troubled, he trimmed his beard, he had a little place here where he shaved, he looked like a dandy, and here he looks like a slob, and he gives a get. And they ask him, Zeretzoncha, you know, he knew if he doesn't give a get, he's going back to jail. And he gave the get. And my daughter says, she admired it. At the end, he turns to her and he says to her, he bows, curtsies like a French gentleman, and he says, Kol hakavod mach. Okay? So you see, the police have power here, but it shows you, as big as a maneuver as this guy was, Now, what's fascinating is the next shiur I'm going to do was left out of the middle edition, the one in 1881, I believe it was. It was left out when they reprinted the Besamim Rosh. Why? Because the middle shiva, again, it's a reflection of how the world is changing.
Number one.
We'll get to it. It's Shin Mem Hei. Shin Mem Hei. Next week I'll show it to you inside. I'll show you the Rambam. But we have to understand something. Suicide. What is suicide? It's murder. When I'm in an honest mood and I see yeshiva boy smoking, I walk over and I tell them, "You're over on the Ten Commandments. Lo tirtzach. You're killing yourself." So, I have to be honest. I tell them I'll arrange with the doctor. David Appleram, say, Hashem, you come to Modu. I miss David. David used to say to me, if anyone smokes, tell him to call me. I'll take him to see an autopsy of a smoker and a non-smoker. And I'll show him the lungs of a person who smoked and a person who didn't smoke. He says, I guarantee you, after he sees the lungs of a smoker, he will never touch a cigarette again. So, suicide is suicide. Are you allowed to kill yourself? Throughout the millennium, there was no greater shame than someone who killed himself. Lo tirtzach on himself. This takes me to Mount Freedom in New Jersey, near Atlantic City. Anyone know what I'm talking about? Baron D. Hirsch, the 1880s, 1890s. Baron D. Hirsch, when everyone was talking about going to Israel, building Israel, the Jews have to integrate, the Jews have to become a normal people. Part of being a normal person is working the land. Without working the land, we have no food. So Baron Hirsch thought Jews have to have colonies in America, in South America. He didn't believe Israel, he was not in favor of Zionism, but they have to become normal people. They can't be milkmen. Not every Jew can be a panhandler. Not every Jew can push a pushcart. So they organized colonial colonies for farming. One of them was in Mount Freedom. And it never worked out. It didn't succeed. It's not like Israel where we became the greatest farmers in the world. Yes, Josh?
Wasn't that just to avoid immigration to Germany?
No, it was to avoid. Not everyone could be stuck in New York at the great anti-Semitism. The idea was Germany then was fine. The idea was to give Jews the chance to have a panusser in Kabod, and not necessarily Luft mention. Remember, Jews weren't going to universities yet. It's not like today, where everyone can go to a university, go to graduate school. All right, they organize farm communities.
Somebody
A lot has been written, a thesis has been written. It's a fascinating study. Now, Mount Freedom, I don't know what's there today, but in my time, when I got smicha, there still was a little community with an Orthodox shul, because we're talking the 1880s. What kind of shul could they build? Only an Orthodox shul. So the rabbi was my classmate, Bernie Cohn, Rabbi Dr. Professor Bernard Cohn, then known to me and still known to me as Bernie. So we were very friendly. I was in the rabbinate in Lower Merion, he was in Mount Freedom. So we would visit each other occasionally. It was about an hour and a half drive, as I recall. So I go down to visit Bernie, and he shows me the community, and he takes me to the cemetery. As we approach the cemetery, I see graves. I can still see it in front of me. We come to Machon Lev, let's say, whole group of graves. And then you walk another 100 feet at least, till you come to the other graves. So he asked Bernie, what's this? And not only that, there was a fence around the cemetery, but not around the graves, they were outside. And Bernie tells me, this cemetery was strictly Orthodox, and what you see buried there are people who the Rabbanim refused to bury in the real cemetery. I said, so who's buried there? And he said, oh, the old timers once took me on a tour. This one was a murderer. This one was a prostitute. This one committed suicide. Okay? Committed suicide. Yes, I'll show you, it's an open halacha. that we do not mourn for a suicide, we do not give him kavod hamet, he has a din of self-murder. Rotseach atzmi. A doctorate was done at Bar Ilan on suicide. I believe it's by someone named Lichtenstein. It's not Reb Aaron's family. I quoted the book last year or 2 years ago, or 3 years ago in the Sunday class when I dealt with suicide during the Holocaust. So you see a suicide? That's a terrible thing. Lo tiyatzach. Gentlemen, when is the last time you saw a suicide penalized? In the year 2012. I can tell you from my own experience, the early 70s, I know three fine, wonderful, upright, religious Jews. All three committed suicide. One jumping off the roof of my building. One, a Rav who came to see me, had lost his job teaching English in Boys Town, an American, thought I had influence, wanted my help, and was very sick. It was Hanukkah 1971, I had 104 temperature. And I remember talking with him through a sea of pain. And I said to him, wait till I feel better and I'm going to look around for you. P.S. This was on like Tuesday night, Thursday he jumped. The third one was a younger brother of a very brilliant family, Rabbanim. Some remained very firm, some became very left. He was a mashgiach in one of the programs here, committed suicide. I want to ask you, where were they buried? The first one who jumped had just gotten his PhD, a classic case. I don't go into detail, I researched it, I went to the Hebrew library, took out books on suicide, I learned a great deal. Do you know, outside of teenagers, the most prevalent age are men in their late 40s, early 50s, springtime of the year. It's men who should be in the prime of life and get their faces smacked, feel they're not success stories. Spring comes in, the world is changing, everyone is happy, the birds are singing, the bees are out there, the grass is green. Spring, the young man is chasing the young lady, love is in the air, and his life is in a rut. And this individual who jumped had just gotten a doctorate, and someone here embarrassed him, turned him into a gardener, had an ach, it was some disgrace. Don't ask, I had to get up and eulogize him in Heichal Shlomo and lie in public, cover up. One of the terrible things I did in my life, but everyone said I did the right thing. Understand, I didn't talk about the person who murdered him. I covered up. Okay, you know, heart attack. And you should know the police. It was Yom HaZikaron, and I'll never forget, the army was camped out in Jerusalem. A lot of the area was not built yet. Near Yitzhak's house, there was nothing. And the army was camped out, and the Shin Bet was Cheshesh, that it was an Arab murder. And they wouldn't release the body. There was the body right down, and I don't know, I could show you exactly where, what a sight. And I told the investigator, I said, Tishma, Nachum Olamdim Yachad. And I told the story of what had happened to him, where he teaches. And then his wife remembered he's taking antidepressant pills. Within a minute, they released the body, didn't require an autopsy. They knew it was suicide, not a murder. So I had a schut there that I spoke up right away. No, now we study. We all understand. A man, the psychology, the mental illness, the explanation I just gave. Yitzchak, did your great-great-grandfather understand this? Did my great-great-grandfather understand? You have to go to college. You have to go to university. You have to study psychology. Right or wrong? Mendel, who understood this? In modern times, because we live in two worlds, and a little bit of the Toshav world comes into the Ger world, every time there's a suicide, I don't know of one case where the rabbi said, don't bury him properly, don't sit shiva. Time and again we say, Arachmanis, he was out of his mind, he didn't know what he was doing. Okay? And you know what's amazing? The first one to say it was the Besomim Rosh. And because he said it, it created such havoc that in 1881 they wouldn't reprint this tshuva. They left it out. But in 1984, 83, when Rav Omar reprinted it, he could handle it already. Yes, Mendel, quickly.
Some years ago, I saw a comment by the Tiferes Yisrael, I think it was Mikhail, where he talks about how some people say that a suicide doesn't have Olam Haba. And he says, I don't know where they get this from, and they have to feel it between if it was, they did it like out of philosophical conviction.
Well, we're going to talk about that. That's quoting here. Yeah. He's quoting the B'Sam and Rosh. He didn't get that Yeshmaya. Uh-huh. That's the B'Sam and Rosh. It's an interesting point. You'll see next week. Yeah, Nachum. Of course. First of all, I spent endless shurim on Shalom. If you're talking to me about Shalom Melech, but he discusses this, the classic case. It's not for now. I can't redo everything, but next week.
So what did they say about, Feinstein and Barzani? I mean, they were,
Kiddush Hashem. Yeah, Shalom Melech. No Shaila. Kiddush Hashem. Okay, let me reiterate. Again, Feinstein and Barzani, you know what we're talking about, right, David? You don't know. Check with Nachum afterwards. They were Ole Gardon who blew themselves up before, and they asked the Shaila Rav Levi. I spoke about it in class in great detail years ago. It's the Shaila Rabbi Levine, he wouldn't paskin, but they blew themselves up.
They were the gallows.
The Ole Hagadon.
They were going to be hung by the
British. The museum. In Migrash HaRishim is dedicated. That's where they blew themselves up. Explain everything. So Ephraim lacks the background.
I've been there.
So you tell David.
You explain one thing.
So you explain to David. Good. Gentlemen, first of all, I got to tell you to reiterate. Thank you. You have no idea what it's a joy to teach and give knowledge. And all right, we did between last week and this week. We gave knowledge. And again, anyone listening who wants to do a doctorate under the Summer Rosh, I've done the spade work for you. All you have to fill in is the flesh, but the meat and bones is already there. You have to put on the skin, but it's very fascinating. And you can see with cutting off the nose how he felt and how he's caught between two worlds. He throws out all the chivot we spoke about last week and he goes his way. We introduced the suicide issue. We're going to handle that next week. Gentlemen, tomorrow is, yes, I have freebies that you may be interested in, don't run yet. The tomorrow is the $99,000 lecture. We finally arrived. I will feel much better after tomorrow. Last week I showed you my critique of the Haredi world. Tomorrow I'm going to show you what the Haredi world slaughtered, desecrated Aaron Rakefet, and I have every reason to be furious at them.
Well, and Daniel went in the lion's den and came out, and you can't do it.
No, say the Bezrat Hashem, and I will show you, and nevertheless, I come back to the underlying theme that I will not throw the baby out with the bathwater, and we're heading through a tremendous Bezrat Hashem understanding of Mesorah, and with that, I conclude all my lectures on Reform Conservative, and we begin a new major topic on Holocaust and Zionism. And those lectures, if they're any good, you loan me, as the Rebbe used to say, a bottle of Bronfen. You say, yes, a bottle of Bronfen, a bottle of schnapps. Gentlemen, Rab, this is from Rav Asher Weiss. These are all the sources on the advance in DNA technology. Very, very fascinating. These are more sources on brain death versus heart death. Gilstein ran a whole series. All right, this I spoke about that, okay?
What's this?
Anyone want the Kol Korei that I went crazy with last week?
What is it?
Sneers? About how your wife should.
She should be thrown in the garbage.
I know someone who could make a stick out of it at a wedding.
If anyone knows.
For Purim Torah.
Purim Torah, fine.
It's absolute garbage.
I spoke last week. I took it upon.
You know, they haven't yet put it on the YU website. I try to find it.
Not me.
Check with him. So give him. Let him know. Let him know we're alive and kicking.
Is this somewhat, and what is this?
And this is 2009 Mishpacha. with an interesting article on Irish Jewry. If you're interested in the Irish Jewry,
let me borrow one for this. I want to go to Ireland.
Until we meet again in health and happiness, das Vidanya. Okay. We are rolling.
Tomorrow, good to see you.